Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What's in a definition? Well, when it comes to government policy, a lot. Yesterday, Mayor Bloomberg announced that his administration is looking to revamp the definition of poverty in this city. The effect, for one, the city's poverty rate could rise from officially 19% to 23%. Look around you. Did you know that nearly a quarter of New Yorkers may be poor? But the level of extreme poverty would drop as the new measurement takes things such as food stamps and tax credits into account. And, of course, all sorts of programs and funding from the federal and state and city levels that target poverty rely on this definition. So we may see some changes as to who gets what as well. Joining us now is Linda Gibbs, the deputy mayor for Health and Human Services, and she announced this proposed change in the definition of poor yesterday at the NAACP conference. Deputy Mayor Gibbs, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Nice to be with you, Brian.
So what are the main changes in this definition of poverty that you're seeking?
The existing federal standard has been out of date for quite a while. When it was adopted in 1969, it was the first time that we had a national poverty measure, so that was great. But over time, the world has changed a lot, but the poverty measure has not kept pace. In 1969, we knew that households spent just a third of their income on food, and now in 2008, that's down to only 13%. And so the world has changed. What families need to spend their money on has changed dramatically, but the poverty measure remains pegged to that 1960s household consumption.
Right. And my understanding is that that federal poverty measure was developed based on a study that showed poor Americans, as you said, spent roughly a third of their after-tax income on food. But ever since then, the country's poverty levels have therefore been gauged by tripling the annual cost of groceries. Does that really mean that even though the cost of food is updated for inflation, accurately or not, that it doesn't take into account the cost of housing, the cost of transportation, the cost of gasoline, the cost of prescription drugs? It's just based on food?
That's it. That's exactly right. And it was accurate at the time it was adopted. It was reflected the true household spending. What we propose instead is that we adopt a measure that looks at all of the basic minimums, food, clothing, shelter, utilities, and records the expenditures necessary to achieve those in current time, so that as you move forward, as each of those things adjusts, then you have an accurate reflection of the current cost so that you get a true measure. And then the other thing you mentioned is their recommendation was that it be the cost on post-tax income. Well, they never did that. Even from the beginning, this half of the equation was flawed. They looked at pre-tax income. And so the other half of the adjustments that we're proposing in the measure is that we really need to count all the resources that are in the household. You need to count the post-tax income, and that's so important for low-income families because we do use the tax code to offer tax rebates, like the critically important earned income tax credit. And we also need to take into account the wage taxes that people pay, so that's a deduction. But the families, particularly that are poor, receive other governmental transfers like food stamps and the Section 8 to support their housing costs. And all of those benefits are not counted as resources that are available to the household to meet their needs. So it's flawed on both sides of the equation. And it's been flawed for a while. That's why in 1995, Congress commissioned a report from the National Academy of Sciences to make recommendations on how to update the measure. But those have never been adopted until now.
We can take some phone calls and web comments for Deputy Mayor Linda Gibbs on the definition of poverty and the practical implications of that. 646-778-3729, 646-SPUD-RAY, if it's easier to remember that way, 646-778-3729, our temporary call-in number, 646-778-3729, or post a comment to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. So in numerical terms, as I understand it, if the federal government calculated poverty your way rather than the way they do it now, the poverty level for a family of two adults and two children in New York City would go down from $26,000 annual income to $20,000, correct?
That under the new measure that we've adopted, we calculate that that household would need $26,000 in order to meet that basic set of goods for basic household sustenance.
Oh, right. Of course, it's the it's the opposite of what I said. It would go up. So $20,000 would still be poor, but $26,000 would also be poor.
So we under the official measure for that family, the one that's currently used by the federal government, that's the level of $20,444. Under our calculation, that adjusts for that mix of goods in the household, that more accurate package of goods, but also makes another really important adjustment, Brian. The recommendation of the National Academy was also that you need to adjust it regionally to reflect local differences in the cost of living. And so one of the most significant influences that causes our threshold to go up to $26,000 is to adjust for fair market rents mm-hmm. in the New York region, which are 45% higher than the national average. And so that has the effect of bringing it up in New York City, but that would not be the case nationally. Each region would adjust the threshold to reflect that local cost of living. And so the threshold would vary by geographic region to reflect the differences in cost by geography in the country.
So this would obviously affect families with children and the kinds of federal benefits they were eligible for. It would also, I gather, affect the elderly, because under the current federal measure, fewer than one in five New Yorkers who are 65 or older are poor, but you think they're really more than that, correct?
So with overall, our measure shows 23% of the city's population living below the poverty line, and that compares to the federal measure of 18%. And so it does show a higher proportion of individuals in the city living in poverty. What it also shows is, and this is where the implications of our government targeting of programs becomes clear, there are different implications for some of the different populations. So, for instance, we see children being less poor under this measure compared to the official measure. And that's a reflection of the investment that we as a country make in households with children in need. Conversely, the elderly rate of poverty increases. And that is, we think, driven largely by medical out-of-pocket expenditures on pharmaceuticals in particular that drive up costs, and it's the things that the elderly have to spend their disposable income on, and therefore giving them less for those other goods and services that they need for their daily lives.
Listeners, I don't know if you want to call and talk about your personal situations, but maybe that would be a good idea. Do you think that the rising cost of fuel, the rising cost of housing has kind of made your own income flirt with the poverty line or what should be the poverty line? How does it make sense to measure this to you based on your own experience? 646-778-3729, 646-778-3729. And before we take a phone call, just to stay on the question of the elderly for a minute, reading the Daily News version of this today, it quotes you saying the high cost of prescription drugs puts 32% of city seniors in poverty. Is that what you're saying?
That is the results that come from this new National Academy of Sciences measure in New York City.
So that's amazing, because the whole point of Social Security in the first place, and then Medicare, was to combat elder poverty. There used to be so many senior citizens in poverty in America, and Social Security has really gone a long way to reduce the senior citizen poverty rate. People forget because we take it for granted now, and Medicare on top of that. But if we're saying that still, or again, one out of three seniors in New York City is poor, then that's a major retrenchment, isn't it?
I think what we now have to look at is how this data can help us to delve into the dynamics of this new picture of poverty that emerges.
Mm-hmm. And how
can it? It is exactly why we did this, so we have a more accurate depiction.
So how can it? What can you do differently at the city level?
I want to just go back to something you said earlier. This immediately will not affect eligibility for particular programs, and it will not affect in a direct way the funding that is allocated to programs. What this at this point is informational. What the city is going to be doing is now turning this putting it on our policy tables and in our program discussions so that we can really have much more accurate discussions. And on the issue of elderly poverty, the mayor has asked his city agencies to look at how they are poised to handle what we know is going to be a huge increase in the number of seniors in the city. It is the most rapidly growing population, and he's asked the agencies to identify what they are doing in order to really strengthen the city's ability to grow to meet this need and to celebrate all of the strengths that seniors bring to our communities and to our city as a whole. And so as part of this planning process, we can now take down to the neighborhood level information about not just how many elderly live in those communities, but what the rates of poverty in those communities are, so that we can really target our programs and our resources in a better way to meet those needs.
Adeola in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Thank you, Verla. I love your show. I always listen to it, so I'm so happy to get on. Okay.
Great.
So what I wanted to say is I really appreciate the new adjustment of the poverty level, the proposal for New York, so I think it really makes sense. But I just wanted to add that even though as a graduate student I would qualify under these calculations, I'm sure, for being under the poverty level, I think it makes a difference how people the access to resources that people have because of their education, because of the networks in the city that they may be tapped into. So I don't know. I think a family, a poor family in the Bronx, whose I guess most of the family members didn't graduate from high school, might have a different experience of their poverty than I might. So I think that's just something important to note about this.
Right.
And to add into it. Also, in my neighborhood, I live in Greenpoint. I have access to fresh fruits, vegetables, and things that when I lived in Harlem, I didn't have access to. So that makes a difference in terms of what I spend my dollar on.
Those are all great points. Deputy Mayor Gibbs, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. I think that one of the things that we need to get a better understanding of is what are the experiences of people who are living in poverty. And obviously to live with a lower income while you're a student is an investment in your future. And that's exactly right. For a brief period of time, you may be below that poverty line, but the investment in the education we know is going to pull anybody above the poverty line in their earning potentials later, and that can inform us tremendously. And I'm so glad to hear that you have that access to fresh fruits and vegetables. The mayor has been working so hard on initiatives that can bring the supply of affordable and nutritious fruits and vegetables into poor neighborhoods where we know there is a gap between what's available and what people need and would like to buy. And again, that's how this information can help us better plan. There is a direct relationship between health outcomes and poverty. And by seeing now a clearer picture about the dynamics of poverty in our communities, that's information that can help us know where we need to target our resources, where we need to assist households, and where we need to understand how people are perhaps living in intergenerational cycles of poverty versus transitioning through poverty during a short period of their life but ultimately rising out of poverty.
Kevin in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. This is Kevin. I I always listen to your show. I'm glad you let me get on. My thing is that, you know, child support. I pay child support to a woman who now gets the benefit of the tax rebate. What about the father who has to put out and plus have a place for the baby to stay when they come up on the weekend?
It's such an important point. We know that the earned income tax credit has done a tremendous amount to encourage the heads of household that are raising children to enter the workforce, and it's improved their earnings and has reduced poverty. So that's had a hugely beneficial effect. But if you are not the custodial father, like your situation, you can't receive, even if you're working as hard and earning the same amount of money, you don't get the depth of the benefit that the custodial parent receives. And what the mayor has proposed is that we change the formula for the EITC nationally so that all low-income workers who are doing exactly what we all are hoping that they will do, which is to go out, get a job, work full-time, support their children, be good parents, that all of them should get the equal incentive of that more generous EITC that now is only available for the for the custodial parents.
That's really interesting. So that has to be enacted at the federal level?
That is, for all intents, while the city and the state have local EITCs, the depth of the benefit, it really needs to be a federal policy. And we're very encouraged by the number of jurisdictions and entities that are now advocating for this. And it's just based on the data. We know it works. Now let's take that lesson on to other populations.
Kevin, thanks for your call. Now, before you go, there are hearings coming up in Washington soon on the broad issue of poverty and, I guess, the poverty line. So did Mayor Bloomberg and you unveil this new definition of poverty last night at the NAACP conference at this time to try to affect some hearings and some federal policies?
Well, we did it at this time because it was done. We've been working on it for about a year. We're very eager to release it. But we're clearly working to support any of the Congress members and the congressional committees that are interested in helping to draw a better picture of poverty in the country as a whole. So Congressmember McDermott from California heads a subcommittee of the Ways and Means Committee that is, of course, chaired by our Congressman Rangel, and we are working closely to tell them about what we've done, what we learned along the way, and to support them in their efforts to advance this conversation nationally.
Thank you for having some of this conversation with us here this morning. This is really interesting and important to a lot of New Yorkers' lives, and based on your stats, some of our listeners are just realizing how many New Yorkers' lives, and it's a little shocking, really. Deputy Mayor Linda Gibbs, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, the Giuliani-era dance ban for most New York City bars may soon be reversed. Stay tuned.